here we are with Mavs Moneyball. It's me and Hal slash Tim Brown, and we're going to be talking about some of the hot Mavericks topics of the moment. So, first of all, I think we want to talk about how good Monta and Dirk have looked in the first couple games.
Monta has looked really pretty good on almost all counts, despite the crap I have given him, among others. What do you think?
You know, it's Monta thing is a little weird to me. You know, it's I think that basketball Twitter largely exists, let's call this intellectualist way of talking about basketball, as a reaction to ESPN's more uncritical, narrative-driven news. And it's a good thing, but I think also when you try to avoid the narrative, you sometimes get these anti-narratives, and narratives that are aimed anti other things. And in this case, it was against this kind of, you know, volume scorers or good scorers idea. I mean, the thing I found most insane was this idea that Dirk's impact on Monta wasn't going to do all that much. I mean, you look at guys like the contract he got, J.J. Barea. It's sort of, there's no point in being a great player if part of it is improving people around you because of what the defense does.
Right. Yeah, I think that's true. I think there's documented evidence of kind of it going both ways. So there's definitely this sort of anti-trend of like, Monte's just bad. We know that because of this stuff that we're super excited to talk about that's super contrary to ESPN. So you get a lot of this anti-narrative driving this just Monte is generally bad thing. But I think there's also some cases of players just not improving given a better context like they're supposed to. And so I think people are torn between this. Well, we've seen it happen with Dirk. We've seen it with J.J. Barea. We've even seen it, like, people kind of forget, but Jet wasn't that great in Atlanta before he came to Dallas. Wasn't that great in the Celtics either, so it worked with Jet. But there are other players where it's been a pretty decidedly meh phenomenon. I think there's some anti-narrative, but I also think there's some just kind of confusion between trying to deal with the two different instances.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. You know, you don't want to come down on just because he's not as bad as people think. It doesn't necessarily mean he's as good as people think. And speaking of Jason Terry, I thought in preparation for this meeting, I would look up Antoine Walker's stats.
Oh God,
from his career to come up with another guy who was a bit of a chucker before he came to the Maverick. Would you like to guess Antoine Walker's field goal percentage in the 2 years before he became a Dallas Maverick?
Oh, I don't know, 43%?
So it's 39% and 38%.
Ooh.
So you look at Monta Ellis, and you got, you know, even last year when he wasn't very good, it was 41%. Before that's 43%, 43%, 45%. And, you know, for a point forward, Monta, Antoine Walker sure had less assists than Monta before he came to the Mavericks. It was, you know, three for a lot of years, a couple of years where it was over five. Last year, Monta was at six, and he's been 5.5 or six for a while now. Right. So when I saw Brandon Jennings got basically the same contract Monta did for the Pistons, and you saw everybody talking about how that might actually work out for them, you saw people talking about how awful this contract was for the Mavericks. He was a little bit baffling because it's a guy who has a lot of skills you could use, even though he's not a perfect player. I mean, people don't really want to talk about, you know, we don't have the patience for this exactly, but when I look at the Mavericks, I unfortunately see a two-year plan. You know, they started out with basically nothing this year except for Dirk and Marion, and they got guys who exacerbate their weaknesses. I don't think there's any question about that. The defense is going to be bad. We're going to talk about the offense in a little bit. It may not be as good as people think. Going into next year, if Dirk can continue to hold it together and be effective, I'm looking for a big bounce back year from him. You're talking about, you have three starters nailed down. You know, you got Calderon at point, Ellis at the two, Dirk at the four. Maybe you get Sean Marion to sign on for a little while longer. Then you could start addressing those weaknesses with other guys. And to me, you know, the fact that they couldn't do it all in one summer, despite Dirk's advancing age, is not something that disturbs me unduly.
Yeah, I think sort of going back to the Jennings thing, I don't get that either. I feel like Jennings is in a much worse situation than Monte is. Because that's a guy who totally collapsed last year along with Monte, precisely because their team had no floor spacing. And somehow they expect him to thrive in a team with no court spacing. I don't get that. You know, something that I think is interesting regarding Monte in the first couple preseason games we've seen is that a lot of people, myself included, are kind of glowing about the positive things that I think people just kind of missed as a result of the anti-narratives. You know, everyone knows he's a good passer, but until you start watching it in a team with all these threats, you don't realize quite how good and how nice it looks. But there were some things I noticed that people were kind of ignoring because they were too busy watching the really pretty stuff that I think is easily ignorable in the preseason games that could be really concerning 40 games in after you're done watching it for a while. One, he wasn't particularly prone to jacking up just like leaning contested mid-range jump shots all the time, which I think is what people were expecting, but he was really prone to jumpers coming right off of screens, which I get why people kind of look at that and say, well, he's pretty wide open, that's fine. But I look at that and say, no. Because I see the role man, I see the potential to start these catalysts of plays if only he's going to distribute it to someone, either the role guy or a guy back on the corner or in the wings who's not getting as much attention because, like, when Dirk is the role guy, he tends to draw double teams. Any number of things you can start to move a play along, go at the basket for that matter. And watching him pull up on the jumpers before you can even start these plays is really frustrating, especially when he's doing it early in the shot clock. I mean, this is sort of the perfect, like, Miami Heat offensive scheme where you run these pick and rolls that scramble people, but it's not even really the main play you're running. You know, you run it, then you dish it out to someone who's not even in the pick and roll, who then does something else with the scrambled defense. And this could be sort of Monte's ideal position as a play starter, and watching him throw it away with a jumper before it even really starts just already is kind of like, whoa, that's probably something you should kick. I saw him do it quite a few times, and if that's a habit that keeps up, that's concerning. So
it's a really good point. I'm a big proponent of, you got to look at how a guy scores and whether that's ultimately going to be good. I'm sure all Mavs fans remember that the Mavericks basically started out last season shooting 65% every game. And if you look at the shots they were taking, you couldn't help but say they're probably not going to make these down the course of the year. You know, that being said, I did say it in a column because, being a Mavs homer, I'm an incurable optimist. Nevertheless, you know, it's so this is something that I know you mentioned earlier, this role man thing. I think you had some interesting thoughts about the role Brandon Wright is going to have in this offense. Obviously, we haven't seen Jose Calderon and Monta Ellis. We haven't seen Wright and Monta Ellis. The idea is Monta can run in when Dirk draws the defense out and do some good things around the basket. But if I take your point, is that, you know, without somebody like Brandon Wright to come on the other side there, they can still collapse pretty effectively. And, I'd like to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty good summary of what I was getting at. And really, before we see Jose on the floor, this is a decent amount of speculation, because I'm extrapolating what I expect the court spacing is going to look like with Dirk and Jose as your three-point threats. But even if there's a guy hanging on Jose at the, you know, wing or the top of the key, wherever he's going to be spotting up in the corner, and not leaving him, that means you're going to have, you know, the big man trying to contain pick and roll with Dirk. If Monte is going to be pulling up for jumpers, that's not good. If he's going at the, which is where he'll be open in those instances, you know, the big man will move up, but he'll have space off of the pick from his man, so he can pull up for that mid-range jumper. We know that's not a good idea, right? I mean, Monte that Grant Land article from Kurt Goldsberry, Monte is one of the worst mid-range shooters in the NBA. You know, I suspect that will go up when he's, you know, not taking literally leaning shots in a dude's face at the end of the shot clock every time, but it's still, he's not great at it. And he's very good at the basket, but when he runs at the basket off of these picks, there's the big man guy waiting for him. If there's someone like right there who scores literally 70% of his shots off of cuts, I mean, think about that. 70% of his shots he makes on cuts.
Yeah.
Either his big man, the big man is just not leaving Wright to contain the pick and roll because Wright is as big a threat as Monte is, or he does, and Monte has a perfect pick to a cutting Wright, and there's a 70% likelihood that that shot's going in. So that's scary, right? Like, how does a defense deal with that?
Yep.
You can't leave Calderon to make your third defender the point guard. You can't leave Wright to make your third defender the big man. You can't leave anybody. You literally can't contain a pick and roll with Wright in there. Without him, it's going to be rough because Monte's a very good passer, because Dirk is Dirk, and because Jose is a great shooter. You know, there's going to be a lot of good chances, but it's not indefensible. Having Wright on the court might be indefensible, and I think they're going to need to be indefensible.
Yeah, so this leads us pretty neatly into our next topic here. You know, the Mavericks have a lot of interesting pieces, and really interesting pieces. There's nobody in the game who's as good at the mid-range shot as Dirk. I mean, basically, no one else should take mid-range shots but Dirk, right? But there's also, I mean, literally, basically, nobody who's as good at those shots and at three-pointers as Jose Calderon. Calderon shot better from those distances, with one exception that I can't remember, than Steph Curry last year. I mean, obviously against weaker defense, but the point stands. And then they have Brandon Wright, who is the real wunderkind at scoring around the basket. I mean, the number of games that the guy is 6 of 7 or 7 of 7 is ridiculous.
Right.
Very interesting pieces. That being said, the reason that I was such an early adopter of the Monta move was that I added up the number of points that every player in the Mavericks had scored the previous season. And without, you know, with the guys they lost and all that, before they had signed Wright, we were at something like 75, which actually is not a high-powered offense. You don't get that far with Calderon, because he gives you 10 to 12 points. You might get that far with Monta, and that's why I was interested. But still, some things are going to happen if we're going to get to 100 points a game, right?
Right. So, you know, that's an interesting... I guess that kind of goes back to this like debate that everyone's been having for a long time that I don't have any answer to, is how valuable is off the dribble creation, right? How valuable is being able to create your own shot, as they say? And, you know, that's really hard to know. And I think it depends on context. Like, you know, the big example everyone used was Rudy Gay last year. Part of the problem is that Gay created a really vicious circle in Memphis. They would start a set, kind of abandon it midway through when there wasn't a good option at the end, and just give it to Gay, who was sitting in the wing not doing anything for the whole play, and he'd run an ISO in 10 seconds. Instead of having Gay in the set and running it all the way through. Having him as a bailout option meant that they used bad plays a lot. In those instances, having an off-the-dribble creator doesn't help, because you're not doing anything valuable with it. Presumably, Carlisle is smarter than that and isn't going to have Monte just sit at the wing as a bailout option. He hasn't so far in the preseason, so that's good. It depends, too, who we're talking about. Calderon isn't going to put a lot of points on the board. We know that. He's going to put the points he does put on the board very efficiently, and he's going to put a lot of strain on defenses because he shoots those shots so well, but he's not going to put up 20 points a game. Monte.
Which Max Scribes, Fantasy Basketball League, I paid $9 million for his services, so it's kind of a shame he won't be hitting.
Yeah, he's probably not the best fantasy contributor, so that may not have been the best idea. But
I had a dream. It was a crappy dream, but I had it.
So, you know, Monte may put your 20 points on the board that you need. I think the real question about that value in what he will create for the more efficient players is, was Dirk maybe capable of doing all that more efficiently? You know, was Dirk that sort of ISO creator, that defense drawer superstar that they would have needed to give everyone else the efficient chances they need without giving up to inefficient play that Monte will bring. And not only can we not know that until the season starts, but we will, now that Monte's on the team, we'll never know, really. I guess the bet is that with his advancing age, it's going to be harder to rely on him like that for those extra points. But, and I'm, we all know, I'm the biggest Devin Harris fan probably on the planet.
Right.
And I guess I felt like he's a more efficient off-the-dribble threat. He's better at the things we want. I would have wanted him to be better at than Monte is, i.e. smarter three-point shots, better spot-up guy, while still being a minor off-the-dribble threat. So I was really excited about that. But now with the toe injury, they're not even sure if he'll be back till like early December. So like maybe he wasn't the best option in the end. But
right. Much like last year, the Mavericks will be treading water until Christmas, just hoping that Devin Harris gets back.
That's my ideal Mavericks team, man.
Yeah, that sounds good. You know, it's the point you raise about creating your own shot screen. So this is the difference between guys like Peja Stojakovic and guys like Steve Novak. Mavericks had both in their championship year, but they let one go. You can see how effective he is in New York. Peja was a better choice. Because Peja has seen it all. He can shoot that three-pointer no matter who's covering him. Whereas, you know, some of these three-point guys, they are effective because no one's covering them. I've seen some of the stat guys, you know, do some crazy stuff that ends up with Deshaun Stevenson being valuable to the Mavericks run. Dirk, not picking this up, unfortunately. It just, there's no, the stats aren't great yet at figuring out exactly what defense looks like and exactly what being able to score against them look like. And I think when they finally do, they're going to realize, among other things, just how great Dirk really is. You know, he doesn't take as many shots as some of the other great scorers, but there just really aren't a lot of guys. I don't, you know, even think Kobe is a guy who has the unstoppable move that Dirk has, you know, Kareem skyhook and that sort of thing. And that's why in those finals, no matter what happened the rest of the game, couldn't stop Dirk from scoring 10 points in the fourth, every fourth. It just, there wasn't a way to do it.
Yeah.
So that's happening. Monta is on a different plane. You know, Monta, I mean, a lot of times last season, the Mavericks got into a lot of trouble because they didn't have anybody when Dirk was out who could create a shot at all. So if they scored at all, it would be on these Sean Marion dish and dives where he would get the ball into the basket by that, you know, magic that he has and put it in, and that was more or less the only way they'd score. Monta is not chained to that. I see him as kind of like a superpowered Caron Butler, you know, slightly better at the things that Caron is good at.
Right.
On the other hand, being seduced by your ability to do that, and nobody is more seduced by their ability to do it than Monta have it all, there's a danger in that.
Right.
So it's the balancing act that we're all watching this year.
Yeah. And it's one that I think scares me for probably good reason. I think, like everyone else, you know, I sit here like, oh, look at all the potential. But at the same time, I'm like, oh, God, those shots off screens. That's not what we want. Please. Speaking of, though, with his enthralled sort of sense of self-worth, FFF idea. Monte goes right to therapy for his third-person usage addiction.
You know, I love, I think the best thing about picking up Monte is he's a terrific fan fiction Friday character.
Right. And I keep finding myself
writing about him.
I just have this image of him sitting in a therapist's office saying, I can't stop referring to Monte in the third person. Please, help me.
maybe that'll happen. You know, ideas sometimes. I mean, it's like I say, if it were possible to be okay with the idea that the Mavericks have a 2-year plan here, then they can address a lot of the weaknesses they currently have. So I'd love to see them be good this year. Love to see them make some noise. And really, you know, this is that anti-narrative stuff. There's no reason they shouldn't be. They almost made the playoffs last year when literally all they had was Dirk for half a season and, you know, Sean Marion. And, they're better than they were last year. The right one caveat being we don't know how the center position is going to be at all. I mean,
yeah.
D'Alembert is the starter. Bernard James is not even getting burned in these preseason games. Brandon Wright is out for a little while. That could be a big problem. But if you look at the Mavericks' salaries, you know, you're talking about a lot of money out there next year. The only people they're paying are Calderon, $7 million, Ellis, $8 million, Wright, $5 million, and then like $3 million for some young guys. So that is something like $24 million. They re-signed Dirk for $10 million is my guess. That's what Duncan got at that point in his career for 3 years. You know, you're talking about, let's say, $40 million with holds and things like that. You still have $16, $17 million to spend. And, again, you got starters at three positions. You could theoretically have starters at four positions, depending on how Brandon Wright goes this year, although it's obviously hard to see him as a starting center. And you can do something with that.
Right.
Unless the floor falls out in Dirk's career, in which case you can't do anything with that. But honestly, you know, as much as we talk about the smart GMs, I think Mark Cuban was right that getting in line behind all the teams trying to tank right now is not the way to go. And so I like this. And if they turn out to be awful, they're going to get those draft picks anyway. They will be tanking without meaning to. So God bless them.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think this is a good, I think it's a good plan. I was really, honestly, I was like way on the bandwagon this offseason after, you know, the second they started doing things after losing Dwight. Because I felt like that, you know, like you've got this 2-year plan. It makes sense. They're pretty decent on paper and they can add a big piece next season. Like, that's all good. The second they signed Monte to long-term money, I raised an eyebrow. And I still am now kind of tentatively uncomfortable about this, mainly because, you know, I, like most of the critics, am really worried about the defense. I feel like they've sort of got themselves in a hole now where they were never going to be able to tank in the first place. Mavs could never tank effectively with Dirk Nowitzki on the roster. You just can't. But really, everyone, you know, I've heard this a lot. They were a 500 team last year. They got better. So clearly they're going to be a positive record. And I have two responses to this. One, they got better in some senses, but not necessarily in others. And two, everyone else also got better. So that also doesn't mean that their record is going to be above 500. So one, when I say they got better in some senses than others, I think really more than they're analogous to last season's Mavericks, I think this team is more analogous to last season's Rockets. They're a team that's likely to have an extremely high-octane offense with little to no defense. And the Rockets had the best offense in the league last year, bottom 10 defense, and they ended up as the 8th seed in the West. And I think that's roughly what we're looking at as Mavs fans. We're looking at a top 5 offense, probably. Even, you know, the detractors are saying we're looking at least a top 10 offense. I think we're looking at the top 5. With a bottom 10 defense. I mean, the stats coming out of NBA.com have said that the Bucks had the most attempts in the restricted area in the league by a long shot last season. And it gets even worse when it included Monte and Brandon Jennings together. I mean, it's really bad. And Jose has basically the same problems defending that Brandon Jennings does. He stays in front of his man all right until he's screened, and then he has no idea where he is. Monte does okay around screens, especially he's looked better around that in the preseason, but he just can't stay in front of his man more or less no matter what, which I don't understand because he's plenty quick, but, you know, he can't. Dirk has no way to get around screens. So I'm terrified the first time we'll see a shooting guard run a horn set. It's going to be bloody. It's going to be really, really bloody.
Yep.
And, yeah, you know, and so I think at best we're looking at, like, Rockets from last season level where they're going to score a lot, maybe even be fun to watch, but they're not going to do better than 8th seed in the West.
I bet my bet is they do a little bit better than that. You're right about the Rockets in the West, that they're very similar in terms of the teams. But I just think the Mavericks are better set up to win a couple more games. But I don't know. You know, who knows? If it were me, the major thing I think I would have done last offseason that they didn't do was re-sign Elton Brand. He got a $4 million one-year deal from Atlanta. And he made a big difference in their defense.
Yes, I agree with that so wholeheartedly.
Yep.
I mean, D'Alembert is basically a poor man's Elton Brand.
Right.
Why on earth they picked him up for basically the same amount of money without re-upping on Brand baffles me pretty drastically, especially because they could have done it with Bird rights from last season, so it wouldn't have affected the cap in any significant way. If they had done him for multiple years, they still would have, per your projection, a good $13-14 million in cap space next season. When you're not going for the max level, which we're not, we don't have $20 million. That extra $3 million isn't going to hurt you too much.
Yeah.
That'll still get you a Josh Smith or better-esque player, right? I mean, there's not... So I don't get why they didn't do that either. And that could really hurt them big time.
Good. I mean, that's the part that scares me the most. I look at the rotation of the centers. You know, D'Alembert and who knows. And that's not good news. But yeah, so I'm going to offer up my final thoughts a little bit here, which are that I think all the criticisms are just. I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens. You know, what everybody has to remember about all season shopping is that it's not a supermarket. You know, you can't comparison shop. You can't go to the next supermarket. The basketball players are each one a rare and pretty individual quantity. Best case scenario, they got a guy in Monta Ellis, Jose Calderon, who they can find a way, whether this year through trades or whatever, maybe they'll swing something for Gortat, and they can minimize their weaknesses and bring out their strengths. And since they couldn't get a perfect player, that wouldn't be so bad. On the other hand, you know, it's, as you say, a strange tension between proceeding in a smart fashion and spending $9 million a year for at least 2 years on a guy who has not so far shown that he's necessarily good for a team for all his considerable talent. Obviously, there's no question that the future of the Mavericks in the next 2 years rests on what Monta turns out to be. And early returns are good, but it's the preseason.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good summary. I personally, I know a lot of people are high on Gortat. I would hope they can pull for something a little better than him. Mostly because people talked about how bad he looked last year. I didn't watch him too much. What I've seen didn't look that great. He looked really bad in Eurobasket this last year, which is a very different deal. Like, Calderon looked bad in Eurobasket, but, you know, that doesn't tell us much. But, you know, I just look at that, makes me nervous. I don't know that we're getting, you know, we're looking at the same Gortat we were the last few years. But even, you know, people have been saying Danny Granger or something like that. You know, an extra, he could be a big defensive force. He could play, you know, along with the offense. Still got more years in him than, like, Marion does. Not saying flip him for Marion, because I think you could use him at shooting guard along with Marion, which would be, like, pretty deadly. But at any rate, you know, something like that to add some defensive dimensionality, an extra piece that can make a big difference somewhere along the line.
Would make a big difference, yeah. Yeah, in my case, it's a question of what assets they have to trade. And I don't know if it's that much. And I think Gortat, last year of his contract, pretty gettable. Yeah, like Granger, somewhat less gettable. But I certainly think Granger would be a better get if they can get him. And you could certainly do better at Gortat than this point. I just don't know if the Mavericks can.
Well, and that's fair. I guess I'm being the unfailable optimist, going just more than anything, like more than being realistic. I'm just sitting there going, please, 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 God, let there be something better. Like, let us have some option more open than this.
It wouldn't be so bad.
But yeah, I mean, you know, maybe not. I think those are valid final thoughts. I think. You know, we're all sitting here hoping that the offense is super high octane. I think it likely will be. I'm nervous because they lived and died on mid-range jump shots last season, which more than anything was a function of the fact that Carlisle structured a transition offense out of Collison and Mayo's athleticism and speed, and yep. they had no idea what they were doing, so they pulled up for mid-range jumpers all the freaking time, and it was insane.
Really rarely seen players who, for all their talent, seemed to have less idea what they were doing.
Yeah, and they didn't. And so they pulled up for a lot of mid-range jumpers, and it's telling that, Vince Carter was probably one of the better shot selection players out of the set. But nonetheless, that said, Collison and Mayo and even Mike James, when he got rolling, were actually pretty good mid-range shooters. And as a result, they were the third best mid-range field goal percentage team in the league on a really high number of attempts. And I'm worried that Carlisle is going to try and do this super fast transition offense thing again. Neither Calderon or Dirk have ever been particularly good transition players, have ever been particularly fast players. I'm afraid they're going to do, Monte's as bad with some of this decision-making in transition as the others are. I'm afraid that we're going to end up in the same situation of lots of transition, mid-range, pull-up jumpers, except now our squad is much worse at them.
And great point. Yeah.
That makes me really happens. Nervous. So, anyway, other than that, presuming that doesn't happen, because I think Carlisle's smart enough to avoid getting into that particular disaster, I think we're looking at a top 10, probably even top 5 offense. Hopefully we can make something more happen in the future, and for all our qualms, maybe this isn't the worst thing in the world.
All right. Well, good talking to you, and appreciate your thoughts. I hope the fans out there enjoy it.
Yeah, me too. All right.
All right, take care.